Monday morning. I'm Brooke Allen in for Mark Bayshore today. And our first guest keeps a very close eye on her city, Detroit, which she writes and reports about several times a week in the Detroit Free Press. Columnist Rochelle Riley has recently written about the country's extraordinary presidential campaign, the importance of the upcoming Detroit School Board election, and other important developments. And Rochelle Riley, welcome back to Current State and good morning.
Good morning.
And yesterday, you know, yesterday you wrote about Donald Trump's many harsh and outlandish comments in the presidential campaign and that it is time for the GOP to, quote, end the Donald Trump show. And what do you make of Americans who downplay these comments and continue to support him?
Well, you know, for the longest time, I wasn't writing about the presidential election. I didn't want to write when there were 16 candidates vying for the Republican nomination, and I didn't want to write about Hillary Clinton too soon because there were so many things that were unresolved. So my goal was to be balanced. And I wrote a column before this one that talked about the choice that people had to make between someone who has been dishonest in the past and someone who is dangerously cavalier. But I think now Mr. Trump has gotten to the point where it's not cavalier and it's not sarcastic. It is very dangerous. And some of the things that he's saying now has made it very clear that he apparently doesn't care about the GOP and doesn't really care about our global connection to other countries and what these things, you know, mean to people outside of the bubble that he lives in. So it was a changing of my mind because, you know, it's a presidential election and you want to follow the election, but it's no longer a presidential election. This has really become farce.
And do you say he is paying a price with many establishment Republicans and a lot of the Republicans obviously not coming out to endorse him? Governor Snyder not endorsing him, but yet Lieutenant Governor Kelly is endorsing him. So that has a lot to say, I think, and actually seems like it could split the state.
Well, I have read several stories in the past few days from folks on the campaign trail with the candidates who are talking to high-ranking Republicans who are not only not endorsing him, but distancing themselves from him and talking about what to do after he loses. I think that any of the members of the GOP who are connecting themselves to him may wind up regretting that later. It just depends on how this plays out, because even though he is saying these outlandish things, and there are things that have been discovered about his campaign and those associated with it, their ties to Russia and his call for the NRA or suggestion that the NRA could do something about Hillary Clinton appointing the wrong people to the Supreme Court, I think that in addition to distancing themselves from him, they're trying to figure out how to make sure he doesn't make it impossible to elect other Republicans across the country.
Okay, so let's assume Trump is not elected in November. What do you think the aftermath would be for the Republican Party?
Well, I think that this whole thing for Donald Trump has been about having some way to make money afterwards. I think this was all sort of a ploy to create Trump TV or Trump post the presidential campaign and that he'll do what he does. I think the GOP will be smeared by this for some time and will have to decide what it's going to be, a party for a lot of different people, a party for the people who believe in Donald Trump. I don't think there's going to be a separation of Trump fans into its own separate party, but I do know, and I've been hearing this from a lot of people, that for those people who are not interested in being Democrat or Republican, it is past time for this country to have a third political party. This two-party system has not worked for some time for a lot of people. And I think this may be the straw that finally broke that camel's back.
Okay, so what would the third party, in your opinion, offer?
Well, if they can find a way to meld their differences, it can be a place for people who are fiscal conservatives but don't want people to starve, who believe in business but don't want people to not have health insurance, and who would like to have a party that, quite frankly, isn't on the extreme. I mean, right now you've got two parties that are both just on the extremes of our political system. And why can't there be some place for people who don't believe in the democratic way of governing, which is big government and lots of taxes, still believe in the Republican Party, which doesn't believe in women's rights and, quite frankly, has become very hateful. And they would like to be counted, because right now you have a lot of little parties, and they're not going to make a difference by themselves. But if you can get a lot of those folks who are green, who are progressive, who, you know, have some similarities, and they can find a way to meld those together, and that's a large number of people. A lot of those people were in the Bernie Sanders campaign. A lot of those people were in the Green Party. I mean, even some of the libertarians, you know, some of the Republicans who left the party and became libertarian might find a way to find some commonality with some of these folks and create an actual third party.
And what do you hear Detroiters saying about the campaign?
Well, you know, Detroit is still, you know, more than 85% African-American, and there is nothing right now that the GOP is doing for African-Americans. I mean, Donald Trump not only does not reach out to African-Americans, I don't know that he talks to African-American reporters. I requested an interview and didn't even get a call back. I mean, I'm just a, you know, middle American columnist out here with regular folks who'd like to know what he thinks and what he wants to do for minorities besides ban some of them and call some of them criminals. I do think that there is a sense of disgust. There's a sense of not feeling connected to either party, which is reflected in voting. You know, we just had our last round of voting here, and the turnout was less than 15%. So the people in Detroit, a lot of Detroiters who vote, will vote Democratic because they've been Democratic, because the GOP has not been a party for African Americans for over 100 years. But I do hear from people who say they're just not happy with the choices.
And that brings us to Hillary Clinton, of course. And many Americans have serious concerns about Hillary Clinton. So what are your doubts about her suitability to be president?
Well, here's the shame of it. And President Barack Obama was not wrong when he said during the Democratic National Convention that no one is more qualified to be president than Hillary Clinton. She has been Secretary of State, a state senator, married to a president who, you know, like Nancy Reagan, was participating and was an active voice in how government was run. She knows how to do the job. But the problem is with this idea that she just is not trustworthy. And she continues to do things like that. Even, you know, at the recent convention of the National Association of Black Journalists, the National Association of Minority Journalists, which are advocacy groups that have white members, and there are plenty of white people there for anybody who thinks that this was some exclusive little club. And she was asked about the emails and once again had an opportunity to say, I made a mistake. The FBI has called me on it. Let's move on. She gave this long, convoluted answer about how she short-circuited, and the FBI did not dispute, you know, what she said. And I thought, oh, my God.
Just answer the question, right?
Well, you know, literally. So I think, you know, quite frankly, if Hillary Clinton says nothing from now until November and Donald Trump continues to say the things that he's saying, she can win in a landslide. But it's like every time she has an opportunity to give people the sense that, you know what, you may have not trusted me in the past, but you can trust me in the future, she has lost those opportunities. So it has now literally become, do you want the person that you're not sure you can always trust, or do you want someone who's going to start World War III?
So let me ask you this. You had said a few minutes ago that you had not ever heard back from Donald Trump. Have you spoken to Hillary Clinton?
Well, see, here's the thing with Hillary Clinton. We've got people who are covering Hillary Clinton, and she does talk about issues of concerns to African Americans. And since that's a part of, as a columnist, my mission is to make sure that those issues come to the fore, I don't feel the same sense of urgency about knowing what she's going to do. They're going to say the same things and do the same things that they've always done. And what we have to do is convince both of these parties that, number one, not all African-Americans are alike. Most African-Americans live in the middle class. They have the same issues and concerns as white Americans in the middle class. And those that are in poverty don't necessarily want to be in poverty. So the answer is not to keep those African-Americans in poverty. It's to find a way to change the paradigm. And I don't know that either party gets that, but she talks plenty about black folks to the reporters who do get to talk to her when she talks to them. Donald Trump has not said anything about African Americans or minorities that except what has been negative. And it would just be nice to get some sense that he knows that a third of the country, actually over 40% of the country, and you know, by the time, you know, the next two-term presidency ends, the majority of Americans will be in a minority group. So the idea that you just don't deal with that is just unbelievable.
I'm speaking to Rochelle Riley. She's a columnist for the Detroit Free Press, and we are talking about the presidential campaign and other recent topics that she has written about in her columns. And okay, Rochelle, let's shift gears for just a moment. You've written last Friday, in fact, I think, about the importance of the upcoming school board election for the Detroit Public Schools. And you wrote that, quote, "The most important job in Detroit right now is not mayor or president of the Detroit City Council. The most important job is school board member, whose sole mission is to ensure the future of Detroit," end quote. What makes school board members more important than the mayor or the president of the city council, in your opinion?
Two things. One is nothing, absolutely nothing, that Mayor Mike Duggan and the city council and all of the other leaders in the area right now are looking at or doing or trying to make work will last if they don't have leaders that they're raising to make sure that it can continue. There's nothing worse than, you know, planning a whole renaissance and putting on a whole show that will close in 2 weeks because you didn't bother to train the next actors to step in. What if Hamilton didn't have stand-ins and didn't have people, you know, ready to take the mantra and take the show on? It would close. The idea that we are still graduating kids from high school who cannot read and who go to college unable to actually participate without remedial help because they haven't been prepared, and that we can still have the kind of theft and corruption that has plagued this school district, and the idea that that's okay because we've got this other stuff going on, but then all of a sudden you don't have leaders to step up, you don't have people who are able to take on, you know, this renaissance and have it continue, that's number one. Number two, everybody in America is watching what's happening in Detroit, from the bankruptcy because many other cities are struggling and looking to see how this works, to how you educate urban children. And we have an opportunity with what's happening with this school district to show a way to do it right so that this can also happen in other places where people are plagued by the same problems. There are very few problems except sort of this incessant racism and the refusal to have public transportation that are unique just to Detroit. Every city is going through these things, and they're surrounded by suburbs who, you know, depending on who their leaders are, help or don't help. But we have got to pay attention to the fact that everything we do right now is a huge opportunity to do it with a new beginning. And if we lose that opportunity and we don't take advantage of that, shame on us.
And reportedly, there are 68 members or 68 people who are going to run for the school board. And how do you break that down as a voter?
Well, there are 68, but 10 are having their petitions canvassed, which means they may not have the signature. So that gets it down to 58. If you look at those 58 and figure out either the ones who have never done anything in a leadership role, have never participated in any way to help the schools or anyone else, you can wipe those off. And then if you look at the ones who have some type of reputation in the community, one of the most important things that the current transition manager said is that this school board needs to have people who can sort of get resources from the community, who have the wherewithal and the credibility and the respect to reach out to the business community and the philanthropic community and the religious community and say, we need your support. If they're not people who can do that, then you need to wipe those clean from the slate. By the time you get done, you're down below half of that number, and the rest of that depends on motives for running. But these are folks who you know are looking to do this because they need some type of public persona so they can run for the state legislature or run for the city council, then they need not to do that. I'm hoping that the transition manager will create a pledge that they have to sign saying, we will not run for any other office for the next 10 years after this service because this is the service that we want. Then you'll probably knock it down to about 10 and they elect 7.
So, Rochelle, let me ask you this. Have you ever thought about running for public office?
I get that question at least once a week. And while I actually think that I could do some good, I think right now my role is to keep people honest and to make sure that people are talking about the things that are important, and that's what I try to do with my column. So I'm gonna stick with that public role. The fourth estate is necessary and required more than ever, and with journalism dying, it's more important than ever for those of us who have been trained to do this and who have been doing this for a while to hold out as long as we can. But when I do read journalism, I do have to think about a way to make things work rather than just write about how they work.
Well, thank you so much, Rochelle. And, you know, real quick, I do want to ask you a pretty uplifting story that you did write about a young Detroiter who had his sights set on college but missed an important appointment and with his alarm clock, actually. Can you just tell us about that just super quick?
That is my favorite story of the year. His name is Delshawn Fowler, an 18-year-old kid, one of six children of a single mom who never went to college. He would be the first in his family to go to college and had a black college tour planned, and he was up till 2 a.m. in the morning packing and forgot to put his phone on the charger, and it died, so his alarm didn't go off. And he woke up frantic an hour and a half after the bus left to take them to The Ohio State. So he checked airplanes and bus stations and, you know, all types of schedules to see what he could do, and he finally just, you know, ordered Uber. And this amazing guy showed up and said, you want to go where? And he said, to Columbus, Ohio. He said, you do know that's in another state, right? And he told him why he was going, and that guy drove him to Ohio State. And he actually beat the bus there. And they greeted him like a rock star or a football player. And that is how we should greet academics. That is how we should treat young people who want to do what this young man wants to do. He's now in college. He's enrolled at Harris Stowe University in St. Louis. He took a 12-hour bus ride to get there. And the president of that college is a native Detroiter whose life was just like his. First in his family to go to college. People didn't expect much from him. And he is a university president who's got this kid under his wing. My favorite story of the year.
Well, and you know what? And what a great story, and just shows you how much academics can mean and how much we should support it.
Absolutely. If we did that, oh, what a difference it would make. I think that if we sort of change the way we treat people who make certain choices, we can change our choices for future leaders, for future politicians. All of that will change, and it'll make a huge difference. So I have to say, you know, two things. One is thanks to Delshawn Fowler for wanting that so badly and for, you know, being a role model for other kids. And thanks to Kevin Fuller, that Uber driver who, you know, got this, you know, order at 8 a.m. in the morning to take a kid 3.5 hours, said okay, because what you're doing is the right thing.
Exactly. And he did it. And thank you, Rochelle Riley, for being with us. Again, that's Rochelle Riley. She's a columnist for the Detroit Free Press and sharing her thoughts on the upcoming election and, of course, many elections coming up and, of course, with the Detroit School Board election as well.